Yeah, so I'm not waiting. Did she grab that tiger's balls?
I thought so, too.
Yes.
We'll talk about it, but I think I remember that.
No, from this the book. Is where we're talking about. I'm not putting it off at all.
Well, I thought I remember that from the book, and I remember Francis describing how much of a turn on it was for him.
At least it's in the book. But I need to stress that this movie, unrelated to any. I mean, I guess it's a character beat, but just has a brief moment where a lady caresses a.
It's Tiger, Tiger, Burning Bright. It's William Blake shit.
What?
Yeah. What? This has gone so far afield from being a cold open.
All right, fine. Red Dragon was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America. Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
What about William Blake?
Okay, so the Red Dragon, like the motif, yeah. Right, is a painting by yes. The poet William Blake.
Okay.
Whose most famous poem, as far as I know, the only one I know, goes Tiger, Tiger, Burning Bright, and blah, mm-hmm. blah, blah.
Okay.
That's why there's a tiger.
Oh. I accept the presence
yes.
of the tiger.
Sure.
I'm saying if you're going to have the nice character caress a apex predator's balls, that has to be mentioned.
Okay, but
at
I
some
give me a reason.
Time.
I do. I mean, the reason is that she is one scene later going to caress a serial killer's balls.
I guess.
But I don't know. Like, it just. It feels like it was just too much, like we literally brushed over it in the film for it to really have a real meaning. Like, because it's always, it's a blink if you and you miss it. Because everybody's just like, huh, wait, did I see what I just saw?
I mean, I was very just distracted by the fact that that is an actual tiger. And because this is not Richard Parker CGI times, that is a real tiger. And I found out at this point, you were no longer allowed to sedate animals on film.
What?
So that is a real
tiger
unsedated just tiger just chilling. And this was really messing with me because when I watched this movie very late last night and my cat had the zoomies, Sprinkle, God bless her, I love her so much, but she would not relax. And so I took out a catnip joint and I drugged my 9-pound house cat to be able to watch a film. Meanwhile, a 600-pound tiger just... acting.
And scene.
Yes.
Yeah, Emily, in this scene, we're going to need you to grab this tiger's balls. He's sedated, right? No, not at all.
I assume there was also a stuffed animal involved. I assume the actual ball caressing is not real tiger balls.
It's just, it's one of those, like, hard stop. hang on a minute. Is that what happened in this movie?
Yeah.
And we're just going to go, and anyway, back to the plot. No.
I need somebody to unpack this fully for me, because this is, it's unnecessary. And I know, and there's too many questions. It's way too many questions.
I remember being in college and seeing one of those, like, you know, festivals of student-made films. And one was about a brother and sister. They had some, like, task. It was about a brother and sister trying to achieve something. And briefly in the middle of the movie, they fucked.
Mm.
And that was never brought up or addressed again. They were just, they just went to the thing. And, like, I remember in the Q&A, people were like, so, yeah, what was with the brother-sister incest? And they were like, well, we didn't want the movie to be about that. And I'm like,
so then don't have it there.
You failed the moment you filmed
yes.
it.
Yes.
Right. As soon as it's in there, it's about that.
That's all anybody's going to remember. Oh, God.
My name's Sean Collier. I'm here with two unemployed firefighters in, what was it? Liberty City, Magic Metropolis Place.
Adventure Bay.
Adventure Bay.
Thank you.
It's
Paw-tropolis?
Camila Adams.
Hello.
And Robin Hitchcock.
Woof, woof.
Paw Patrol, the mighty movie, 39 and two-thirds. Apparently that's a popular score for children's movies we don't care about. Madagascar 2 got 39 and one-third. But we've moved on. It's spooky season. How are you enjoying your spooky season so far?
It's still September, Sean.
No, it's not. It's spooky season. September 1st, I started spooky season.
I love
you see
that.
The mat?
Yes, I did. I love that for you and you. Mm-hmm. But for me, spooky season starts October 20th.
October 20th.
If you count different attractions within greater attractions, I've been to 14 haunted houses
this week.
Thus far. So.
And welcome back. Sean Collier is now a married man.
Mr. Sean.
Mr.
Collier.
Step back, ladies.
Yeah.
It's a fully married podcast now.
Yes, it is.
It's it's a fully married podcast. I'm in all of these married spaces. I'm meeting up with two other friends from high school, and it's like, oh man, we're all married.
Oh.
I know most people experience this at, 28 or something, and I'm 39, but nevertheless, yeah. It's nice.
I don't know when most people get married.
I think people make it up as they go.
Yeah.
It's either immediately or much later. That's
yeah.
No, happy to be married. In my experience, married life is like 50% Disney World. So
you're doing right. You're
doing
it right then.
As long as that ratio holds, we'll be fine. Yeah. Red Dragon. I saw it when it came out. I liked it, but clearly did not like it enough to revisit it in the past 22 years. And that feels about right.
Yeah. I actually did watch this again within the past couple years. And so I wasn't like, oh, I absolutely want to watch Red Dragon again. Mm-hmm. But I didn't mind watching it again.
Yeah. I mean, the cast is just so stacked.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, part of that is Philip Seymour Hoffman was still ascendant. Ralph Fiennes was still on the way up. You know,
was he? His peak was English Patient.
Oh, yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
But there were a couple people in there that were, still rising. Even Emily Watson, I would say, was still a rising star. I don't know how far she rose, but
yeah.
It's got a great cast.
I mean, it has an undeniably prestigious cast.
Yes. Yeah.
Right? Like, my pathological need to clock Oscar winners and nominees, mm-hmm. and it's like two winners and at least four nominees. That's a lot.
Yeah.
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 All in meaty roles, also. Yeah.
I did see this in the theater. Mm-hmm. Thanks for asking.
Very scattered. A lot has happened.
You also you've read the book.
Yes. I think I saw Silence of the Lambs way too young.
So did I.
Did not read. I don't think I read that book. But when, I guess this, did this come out after Hannibal?
This was the first book.
Yeah, this is the first book, but the movie.
Yes,
the movie came
correct.
Out a year after Hannibal.
Okay, so yeah, so anyway.
Only a year.
Mm-hmm.
So I have read Hannibal, Red Dragon, and Hannibal Rising.
Okay.
All three of those. And so, yes, I did see this in the theater, and I remember, I liked it?
Yeah.
I enjoyed it? I don't know if that's the word. Right. I mean, I own it on DVD, so I probably have maybe watched it like 5 times in the last 20 years.
That's more than most people have watched Red Dragon, I think.
So, yeah.
And before we get into the other stuff, I want you two to talk about Manhunter. What with the everything, I have not had time to do extra research, but I know that you both compared to the original version of this story by Michael Mann. So you tell me, are we watching the right one or the wrong one?
I mean, it really depends on your vibes, right? Like, if you are a maniac, you're gonna like Manhunter better, and I am, but like I think that there are a lot of things that play out better in this one.
Yes. Absolutely.
And I prefer the ending to this one.
Yes.
I don't know which is the ending in the book. That was my question.
I think this one.
This
is
one,
the,
okay.
Is the ending in the book.
In Manhunter, he just gets him when he is attacking Reba.
Yeah, no, I think he
yeah. So it's kind of like, okay.
Yeah,
big showdown and the good guys win. You know what I mean? It's a little bit different.
I don't think like Noonan.
Yeah,
was the dragon? What's his first? I don't remember his first name.
Francis Dollarhide.
But his, Noonan.
Tom Noonan.
I don't think he was a good choice.
Okay, I love him. I think he's so good.
Yeah, like he's a great.
Yeah,
he's a great actor in most things. I just didn't think he was good to play Francis Dollarhide.
Okay,
because I don't believe that woman would have been so hot and bothered by him.
Interesting.
like, and I know it has nothing to do with like sight or anything, but in the book, like, there's a mention of like how, and also in this one, like how she talks about, all the other girls talk about how great your body is.
Oh,
and how you have a face that, you know, you shouldn't be ashamed of, and, you know, that kind of thing. So she's got a mental image of him. And so that's probably why, but there's nothing like sexy or intriguing about Noonan. Noonan's Red Dragon.
Yeah.
That would make her want him.
That's a really good point. Yeah. I mean, because Ralph Fiennes, his greatest quality as an actor is being really hot while being really off-putting at the same time.
Right.
And so he was well cast with that angle in mind.
Yeah.
For sure.
But does the ending, well, why don't you tell us what happens in the movie, and then I'll ask my question about the ending.
Oh, this is difficult.
Here with trying to fit 47 characters and
18 plots,
a dozen murders, and a flaming journalist into 60 seconds is Camila Adams, whenever you're ready.
Dr. Lecter has been consulting Special Agent Will Graham on a serial killer case. Graham now gets that the unsub is eating parts of his victim. Lecter realizes that Graham will soon discover that he is the killer, so he stabs him in the gut, but Graham also stabs Lecter with arrows and shoots him twice. Several years later, Graham is retired, but Special Agent Crawford needs his beautiful mind to help catch a new serial killer who has murdered two families. He develops a full broad profile, so he reluctantly decides to consult with Lecter again. Lecter is helpful, but still on his bullshit. We meet our new unsub, Francis, aka the Tooth Fairy, aka the Red Dragon. His turn-ons are pumping iron, his dead Nana's dentures, and Dr. Lecter. Francis makes friends with Reba at work, which turns into more. Cops find a letter from Francis to Lecter, fanboying all over him, asking about Graham. They spend some time trying to decide to decode a missing chunk of the letter. They use Freddy from the Tattler to run a story that's degrading and false of the Tooth Fairy, who ends up, oh, this is horrible. I can't do this. I can't do this. It's just too many.
I have failed. A lot going on in there.
Yeah, I failed.
Just walk us through it. Walk us through it. Take a leisurely stroll through the rest of the film.
So they use Freddy from the Tattler to run a story with a degrading and false profile of the Tooth Fairy / Red Dragon with hopes of baiting him. It works, but he kills Freddy instead. Graham finally puts together that the Tooth Fairy works at a video lab that both families sent their home movies to. They ID Francis while Francis is trying to fight the Red Dragon within by eating a 200-year-old painting. He then kidnaps Reba, sets the house on fire, fakes his death, but lets Reba go. Thinking Francis is dead, Graham goes home to his family. The FBI realizes Francis didn't die in the fire. At the same time, Graham finds him in his house. Francis uses Graham's son as a shit fuck. They fight, and he kills him.
Does Graham make it? Does Graham live?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Molly kills him. Molly Graham kills him.
That's true.
To the head.
I enjoy this extra because I have a friend named Molly Graham.
Oh, do you?
And so I was very, I laughed a lot every time they said her name.
So, yeah, I was curious about the ending of the original and the ending of the book because, like, very, very little of all of the detecting adds up to anything.
True.
Yeah.
You know, you could argue that he's, you know, pushed to desperation by the fact that Will Graham shows up at his work and he sees him there. Mm. But one, that had nothing to do with any of the Hannibal Lecter tips. That was just, oh, look at this video.
Right.
Huh, interesting. And then, even at the end, like, you just want a shootout. It feels a little arbitrary.
The thing you have to understand to make this story make sense is that Hannibal Lecter is a side character. This is written before Silence of the Lambs.
Uh-huh.
Hannibal Lecter is not the main character in any way.
Uh-huh.
He was a character that Thomas Harris was like, I really like this character. I'm gonna make him more central to my next book, right? Yeah. And then, again, you know, you can go listen to our Silence of the Lambs episode. Like, Hannibal's actually not in that story,
right?
Time-wise, very much.
Right.
He just has this enormous presence over it. So this movie is taking this book where Hannibal Lecter's in, like, two scenes and being like, how much Hannibal can we squeeze out of this? And it really highlights the structural issues of Will Graham's the hero, and then he goes away for an hour to watch this romance between a serial killer and a really just very unfortunate.
Yeah.
Like, this poor woman.
Look, she's just trying to live her best
life. She is just trying to live her life, and, like, she seems like a cool person.
Right?
And like, I love when she's like, you speak directly, so I'm going to speak directly back to you.
Right.
I could tell that you have a, you've had soft palate repair.
Right.
And I'm like, I love this lady.
Right.
Boy, did she pick the wrong guy. So yeah, that's the problem with this movie.
That and the generally shitty direction.
Okay. Yeah. I was thinking about this while I was watching the movie. I believe that Brett Ratner is the first person who I ever heard described as a hack.
Mm.
I believe he is the person who made hack a word in my brain.
It is a unfortunate tale that he's the one that got hold of this, because it is kind of wobbly, the direction in this film.
Great word to describe it.
And there's just too much they're trying to put together, and it's not seamless.
And he thinks we're such idiots.
Yeah.
Is the other thing. Like, that opening sequence when the flautist is playing off. All we needed was A, our ears, right? Like, I am not a classical music fan, but I could tell he wasn't hitting the notes.
Right.
And Anthony Hopkins doing that magnificent, you just did it. I wish that we had cameras in here. Magnificent little half wink.
Right.
It's just so good. And Brett Ratner's like, I'm going to make sure everyone needs to, I'm going to show you everyone in the room giving this flautist the stink eye.
Right.
Like, come on, buddy. And also the long, like, we do a whole minute and a half of Mary Louise Parker shooting a gun.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why are we, and then I remembered, oh, she shoots him at the end. And I'm like, I don't care. She could just shoot him at the end.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. We can just assume that her husband, FBI agent, has shown her how to shoot a gun.
Right.
At this point.
Right after he was nearly murdered.
Yeah.
Or maybe before. Who knows?
Or maybe you took an interest in it. Like,
right.
Well, and the scrapbook montage that goes on for so much of this movie is just like heavy strings and shots of stuff. Be like, yeah, we generally get how one plot element connects to another. You don't have to. He's just not a very good director. I mean, does he have a good, people like some of the X-Men movies, I guess.
I mean, I don't think this is a bad movie.
I don't think it's a bad movie. Yeah. I think it's badly directed.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think it's a badly directed movie with a pretty good script and great performances. And,
yeah.
It's he really lucked out with the fact that he got such heavy hitters as he did, because anybody lesser than Edward Norton and Anthony Hopkins, who already has a Hannibal Lecter under his belt at this point, would have fallen apart completely.
So we're going to get into this with the facts, I assume, but I was really surprised to find out that Hannibal only came out a year before this.
Well, yes.
Because I, in my brain, had this as like they were responding to the mistakes made in Hannibal.
No.
They wouldn't have had enough time.
They were just going back to that well when this movie was released on October 4th, 2002. It was the 27th number one movie of the year. Won this weekend with $36.5 million. That was a record at the time for October debuts and for fall debuts. Obviously, has been shattered repeatedly since, but that was a very good October opening. It didn't really have competition its first weekend. It easily held off the second weekends of Sweet Home Alabama and The Tuxedo, as well as the 25th weekend of My Big Fat Greek Wedding, which was still climbing. 25th weekend and rising in fourth. The other new release was Jonah, a VeggieTales movie. In sixth, $6.2 million. It did, however, hold off five wide releases in its second weekend. It's a two-week winner, and to win that second weekend, it had to beat Brown Sugar, The Transporter, White Oleander, Tuck Everlasting, and Knock Around Guys. All failed to make.
Only familiar with, like, two or three of those.
Two and a half.
I've absolutely watched Brown Sugar more than I've watched Hannibal or Red Dragon.
Which one is Brown Sugar?
With Taye Diggs and Sanaa Lathan.
Oh, I've never seen it.
It's so good.
Is it a romance?
Yeah.
Well, then I have to watch
it. Rom-com.
Oh, my God. All right.
Mos Def and Queen Latifah are also in there.
Oh, my God. Okay.
That did the best of those five. That was in third, Sweet Home Alabama. Also hung on to
another
the
one I've never
spot.
Seen.
I
keep pausing over it when I'm doing the what should I watch on streaming. I keep being like, Reese Witherspoon's so charming. And then being like, oh, I don't think I can.
I mean, this was when I was working at a movie theater, and yet I never even walked into Sweet Home Alabama.
Like, a teenage boy break. Uninterested in Sweet Home Alabama?
Listen, I walked into a lot of it. Because if you work a lot that weekend, you're going to, you know, dip in and out of everything, but anyway. It did take another horror movie to dethrone it. In that spooky season, The Ring came out in the third weekend. Red Dragon spent 5 weeks in the top 10, made $93.1 million, 29th place for the year. Money-wise, this puts it smack in the middle of movies about Hannibal Lecter. The top grossing is Hannibal, which did come out in 2001. I've still never seen it. That is the highest
Sean, grossing. It's so bad.
I've heard it's just real violent. Is it?
It's very violent. I blame Julianne Moore.
Julianne Moore is terrible in it, but she didn't have a lot to work with.
I mean, I guess.
The story of Hannibal is so upsetting to me in so many ways. Because, like, the deal was he hadn't written the book yet. But he was like, all right, there's money to be made. I gotta write another book. Yeah. And then he wrote this book and everybody was like, yuck. And so, like, Jonathan Demme was like, I'm not doing it. Ted Talley was like, I'm not doing it. Jodie Foster was like, I'm going to go direct Flora Plum, which never happened. Although I did have this little galaxy brain moment because, you know, Mary Louise Parker, Billy Crudup left her when she was pregnant for Claire Danes. Claire Danes later married Hugh Dancy, who played Will Graham. Claire Danes also set to star in Flora Plum.
Wow.
The reason that Jodie Foster did not come back for Hannibal.
Is Claire and Hugh still married?
I think so.
Huh.
Yeah.
No idea.
Anyway, all of this is to say, everybody was like, this is garbage, but there's money to be made. Let's go for it. Mm-hmm. And I thought that this movie, they were like, there's money to be made, but we could make a good movie instead.
I think they were just trying to, like, that made, Hannibal made $165 million. That's a lot in 2001.
For an R-rated movie, especially.
I think they were just like, more, just give it, what, is there another book? Do the Red Dragon book again. I think they just rushed right into it. Silence of the Lambs made about $131 million. This, as we said, 93. Hannibal Rising bombed at $27 million. And Manhunter made $8 million in 1986. It was not a hit. It was fine. That's decent for 1986.
It was bad enough that Dino De Laurentiis was like, you guys go make Silence of the Lambs without me.
Yeah. Yes.
But then he came back.
He was involved
because there
in this
was
one.
Money to be made.
This was the final one he was involved with.
Okay.
Obviously also the final appearance for Anthony Hopkins, who has said he's not going to do it again. If human beings lived forever, I would tell you he's definitely going to do it again. But there's he's what, 91?
Oh my God, really?
There's really no point to it, personally, for him. Like, is there another Hannibal Lecter story?
No, but...
He's 86.
I thought he was 90. That's good.
I mean, 86 is still... He should be... Anytime I see someone in their 80s or 90s as actors, I'm like, you could just rest now, buddy.
It's okay.
Yeah.
Like, you've got old.
Take a break.
I can't believe... This is so far afield. I can't believe Harrison Ford's doing this Captain America.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Like, you have the Star Wars money and the Indiana Jones money, and you got more of both recently.
And you also clearly hate acting.
Yeah.
So, like, how just you, fly your planes around.
You entering the MCU now. Anyway.
Okay.
It's fun little sidebar. In the Manhunter movies?
Yeah.
Did you see Frankie Faison?
No!
Barney.
Barney was Frankie Faison?
Yes.
He's somehow the link between that and these.
Yeah.
Huh.
He's in the first four movies that feature Hannibal Lecter.
Oh my gosh.
Inclusive.
I did not know that. That's really cool.
Right? Way to go, Frankie.
I want to bury this in the Faxy segment. The 45th president and his interest in Hannibal Lecter.
Oh my God. Why?
What's? Because I have a new theory.
This is why, Tony.
This is the why, Tony.
Oh, yes. God, it is.
If, blessedly, you are unaware of this, there was a string, it was more in the summer, where, for no reason that anyone could put together, Donald Trump just started talking about Hannibal Lecter at
the
rallies.
The late, great Hannibal
and
Lecter.
And always said the late, great Hannibal Lecter.
Sometimes he would say Dr. Hannibal Lecter, too.
Yeah, he would drop that in. And sometimes it would seem like, he did reference scenes from the movie Silence of the Lambs sometimes. But at other times, just talked about him like he was a real person.
Yeah.
And someone compared this. I guess he also does this with Al Capone. Oh my God. He goes onto these little rants about Al Capone in very similar structure to his rants about Hannibal Lecter. And no one really knew why. And then at the debate, Kamala said the phrase fictional characters like Hannibal Lecter, and he hasn't said it since. So I am pushing the theory that until that moment, he at least thought Silence of the Lambs was based on a real guy named Hannibal Lecter, and that's who he was referring to, and that's what made him go, oh shit, is there not a real Hannibal Lecter?
I think you are giving him far too much credit for A, his ability to listen, and B, his ability to ever think he might have ever been wrong.
I don't know. It hasn't come up since.
All right. That is impressive to me.
And you know that no one before that moment went up to him and said, you know that there's not a real Hannibal right. Lecter. Like, no one in his team was doing that. That may have been the first time he heard that. And since it's similar to the Capone thing, I think he thought there was a real Hannibal Lecter that the books and the movies were based on. And he was saying late great because he thought he was the serial killer from the 40s. Or something.
Yeah, but why would you think that a serial killer was great?
Right, yeah, that's the other part. It's like, why are we quoting him or referencing him or whatever the fuck? Like, it's like, are you throwing in Ted Bundy and Jeffrey Dahmer in there as well?
Give it time. Long way to election day.
Somebody.
Can we just talk about how hard it is to live in a swing state?
Somebody mentioned this to Anthony Hopkins, that this is what happened. He's like, as a real person, is referencing Hannibal Lecter as a real person, and they're like, yeah, and he just kind of laughs it off. He's like, I don't know what to tell you. Good luck, guys.
Yeah, very much a good luck, babe, from Sir Anthony Hopkins.
Anyway, that having been addressed, that's the why, Tony. This shares the screenwriter, as Robin mentioned, Ted Talley with Silence of the Lambs. Manhunter did not. In fact, Anthony Hopkins, Ed Norton, Rafe? Are we going with Rafe Fiennes?
It is Rafe.
I think it's just Rafe.
Straight up Rafe.
It's Rafe.
Rafe Fiennes and Philip Seymour Hoffman all initially said no to this movie and came back when Talley signed on to write
this script. That's really interesting.
And oddly, it shares a cinematographer, Dante Spinotti, with Manhunter. Not with Silence of the Lambs. They brought back... I mean, it's a different style.
It's so different. I mean, I know that that's what cinematographers do. They pick a style, you know... But the director often will say, use this style, right? And Michael Mann has a very distinct style, especially in the 80s when he was going hog wild with it. So, yeah, that's surprising to me, but cool.
I don't have too much more. I just want you to know that the back tattoo took 8 hours to apply. One of the reasons I couldn't be an actor, I would just be like, no, we're going to have a smaller one.
Or is there just some way we can do this computer?
Can we get a big stencil and I'll lay down on the stencil and you just spray paint it real quick?
I was assuming there was a stencil involved in the 8 hours.
I think he's just lying there naked. Jeez.
With his glorious tush. Yes. At some point I wrote down, does Rafe have a butt double? Nope. Nice dong. Or something like that.
I should know that
the swing of it.
The letterbox list is these films have the D.
Is a bigger splash on there because you also see Rafe's dong in that, which I recently watched.
Mm-hmm. Not the Saltburn problem we discussed last year. He maintains a good bit of shape and structure while running around the house. So good for him.
Who's his wife? Good for her.
And first choice for Will Graham was Ethan Hawke. And I think they got it right with it. And I like Ethan Hawke more than I like Edward Norton.
Same.
But I think this was for Edward Norton.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, I think Hugh Dancy is the definitive Will Graham. Mm. I also love William Peterson in Manhunter, who's playing it as just, you know, the saddest little moody boy who ever lived.
But he's yelling. You took your badge out. You took your clothes off, you son of a bitch.
Sad, like, sad boy.
Calm down, Will.
I think that the thing about Ed Norton's performance in this is that he's likable, and I am always most impressed with Ed Norton's acting when he's playing a likable character, because I know in real life he's just completely insufferable. So I'm like, you can tap, like, you know, I watched Keeping the Faith fairly recently, and I'm like, you can be so charming, and you just choose to go through life as a miserable bastard.
Is he really? Huh, that's upsetting.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's like evil. I don't think, you know, he's not a Republican, but he's just a jerk. Huh. Yeah.
I have to at some point acknowledge what I did not notice as a young man, maybe this is a maturity thing. My God, Mary Louise Parker is beautiful. I don't know if that's, I don't know if she's like 30s hot. But when I first watched this movie, I wouldn't have thought, at age 17, I wouldn't have thought that. And now I'm like, you're very pretty.
I think it's something about her Florida getup.
She refuses, I don't believe she has a bra on in any scene of this movie.
No, right. Yes. And there's like there's a vibe that she's got. She looks like vacation.
She is also the only person in this entire movie set in the mid-80s who even remotely looks like they are alive in the mid-80s.
This movie is set in the mid-80s?
Exactly.
Truly annoying.
Yep, in the opening scene it says Baltimore, 1980, and then it says a few years later.
Yeah.
Oh, that's why he has the terrible ponytail, which, by the way,
terrible.
Minus 1 point.
Yes, terrible ponytail.
And what's his name? The doctor in the hospital has a bad hair, too. Has, like, a big new wave hairdo.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But, like, it's just really lazy period work.
Yeah. No, I truly did not know this was a period piece at all.
I think they...
Well, didn't you think about, like, this has to have occurred before 1991?
That just did not make that connection.
Okay.
Because it's directed like X-Men, because all of the montages and voiceovers make me feel like the early 2000s so clearly.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, it's also, I don't think that, I kind of like that they don't try super hard to be like, this is 1985. Like,
yeah, it would be weird if it was like Air. I don't know if you ever saw that movie. That movie is just like, this is the 80s!
I never finished it. And,
like, I enjoyed it. I, like, the soundtrack got me going, you know what I mean? But, like, I'm glad they didn't do that here. But, like, it doesn't take that much work to just, you know, put some shoulder pads in Reba's outfits, you know? Make somebody hold a silly cell phone or, like, you know, car phone, I guess, is where we were at then.
I think my biggest thing with, there were no car phones. He eats a painting.
Is that more shocking than the tiger balls? Because I was really stuck on the tiger balls.
I spend the rest of the movie after that point wondering how his digestive system is doing. Like, I can't sit down and eat like two bowls of Cinnamon Toast Crunch in a day.
I mean, it's paper. You can eat paper.
But it's so much of it.
Is it in this one or Manhunter where they're like, I sent you this on toilet paper so it will dissolve faster when you eat it?
I think it's both of them.
Okay, yeah. I was like, weird. Weird focus on eating paper in this film.
So he's got pica.
I mean, least of his problems, but it's there. It's on the list.
It's just like, how can he continue his villainy with trying to digest this?
I mean, it depends on the paint, but he's going to have a tummy ache, but I don't think it's a problem.
Really? He should have been stuck on the toilet trying to poo. At least. Just like a quick shot of him just sweating on a toilet.
Look, go to the Chromalux bathroom. It's going to be the guy in there. Which, another why I don't love the way the plot of this is structured is I'm pretty sure he's going to get caught from this, even if it were by Barney Fife.
Yeah.
Like he shoots two people at an open museum and eats a painting.
Yeah.
Like, we don't need any more detection. He's...
Right.
This... The actual arc of this movie, even put Hannibal aside, the actual arc of this movie is killer is successful, falls for a girl, the girl makes him not want to be a killer anymore, he gets desperate and fucks up. You could cut Will Graham out of this movie, and he would end up in the same place.
Yeah. Because, I mean, yes, Will does eventually... It's just, it takes him too long to put the two and two together with, like, oh, he works in a video lab. This is how he's looking inside. And I think Lecter said that to him in the first place. With his little mind games, it was like, you're seeing, but you're not seeing. Or he sees them, but you don't see them. And even though Lecter, he may have mentioned that there was a home movie involved or something when he talked to Lecter.
He asked if he could see the tapes.
Yeah.
Oh, this is also why it has to be in the 80s. So that you have to mail your home movies away to a lab.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, I mean, we could still do that now. Like if we, well, no, they wouldn't be like present day. It would be like.
In 2002, maybe.
Yeah. If I wanted to send my movies to be digitized.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, it has to be.
That's what you do if you want to make Red Dragon in the present. Take note. Send Camila a check.
Please don't. We're fine. We don't need another one.
Let's do the trailer since I already mentioned the letterboxed.
Dear Doctor, I have admired you for years. I wanted to tell you I'm delighted that you've taken an interest in me.
I remain your most avid fan.
That's the same atrocious aftershave you wore in court.
I need your advice, Dr. Lecter.
If you recall well, our last collaboration ended rather messily.
So it's true the Lecter's actually helping with your investigation.
We may have a little over 3 weeks before this freak does it again.
I might not have time.
I do. I have oodles.
Lecter gave me your home address.
Hi. I'm a friend of your father's.
Open your eyes!
No.
I am the dragon. I'll call you if I think of anything else. Would you perhaps like to leave me your home number?
What a bad trailer.
Yeah.
Just, like, it makes it, this movie seem so boring and normal.
It's dry.
Dry, exactly. And like I said, I don't know where our scores are going to land. I do think this is a pretty good movie.
It is, but it's one of those where, like I said, I've probably seen it like five times in the last. It's one of those, it's like, oh yeah, we can watch The Red Dragon. Then you get halfway, you're like, oh yeah. Like, this is, it's,
it goes,
you
know what? It's like, longer than it needs to be.
Do you ever get a craving for a specific kind of fast food?
Yeah.
And then you eat it and you're like, this is actually not good.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what it is.
Exactly. Yes. This is Taco Bell.
Yes.
Me, anyway. Sorry,
your
Sean.
Tongue.
I also have a problem with at the end where he's at Will's house and he's trying to bust down that fucking slat door.
Oh.
You wouldn't even have to be walking fast.
No, exactly. And the $2 lock.
Just kick it. Right. The whole thing will turn into a pile of toothpicks.
And he's a tank.
Right?
He's right through that thing.
It's insane to me.
Things that I said I'm deducting points for, boy, do I hate the stupid, there's this new young upstart at the Academy. What's her name? Fuck you, movie.
Oh, but she seems too pretty to be FBI. Okay.
Great fire, though. Mm. One of the all-time cinematic fires at the end. That just kept going in a good way.
I find the moment when she touches his allegedly blown-off face to be one of the most haunting moments in the entire film.
Yeah.
Do we know whose face that actually was?
It was
character-wise?
It was a dude that was, like, being creepy with her.
The guy that was hitting on her.
Frank Whaley?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
Because
dude shot him in the face.
Shot him in the head in the previous scene.
Uh-oh.
And they say later, it's like, whose body was that? Oh, it was another employee.
Okay.
That we didn't know was missing because we were supposed to be on vacation.
Well.
Also 1980s.
So she put her hand into the big brain on Brett.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of fire, I mean, to me, this movie peaks when Philip Seymour Hoffman tied to the wheelchair on fire rolls down the street. And a passerby goes, oh, my brain is over.
That scene is haunting.
Yeah.
I do remember when Colin and I watched this one the past couple of years, he goes, doesn't somebody get glued to a wheelchair and set on fire? And I'm like, yep. And he's like, that's all I really remember. I think that is terrifying. I do think that scene's a little weird because Philip Seymour Hoffman glued to the wheelchair starts like going like, oh my God, no, no. Just when Rafe is showing off his glorious ass.
I feel like in that age, it's the 80s.
Okay.
And somebody showed, some dude, you're glued to a wheelchair. You've been chloroformed and brought to this unknown place. And some dude is like, look at me. Look at this full body tattoo.
So was he like, I'm about to get raped, do you think?
Maybe.
Okay. Because then he starts showing him his murder slideshow.
Right.
And he has much more mild of a reaction. And I guess you can argue that he's just at that point, like, so in the place of what the fuck is happening to me.
It's just too much.
Right.
Just,
which, like, is valid.
It's
I can't.
Just overstimulated. It's too much.
I can't even begin to imagine how I would feel in that situation.
No.
But it does seem kind of strange.
I like any one of those things. Like, just any one of those things would be enough to just. Blah.
Yeah, set me on fire now.
I'm still curious as to, I don't fully understand why the Red Dragon. Like, why is Francis so drawn to this imagery or
This is where we need a William Blake scholar to come in.
He's big and strong, and his mom made him feel little. And
I mean, he keeps talking about becoming. It's about this like transformation issue. And so I assume that there is some element of that painting or story or whatever the hell that has to do with transformation.
But I didn't see anything about transformation.
Where does
necessarily
the tooth fairy part come from?
Because of the bite marks.
Got bite marks from the
that's
gross
so
teeth.
Gross.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I love the, well, I love is the wrong phrase to begin that sentence with. I found it an enriching detail. The scene where he finally can hook up with Emily Watson, but only because he's watching the video of a woman he's about to kill in a bikini. I'm like, that is such a good, this sick fuck detail.
It is. And the fact that, and that he can get away with it because she's blind.
I also, like, I really thought a lot about, have you ever seen A Patch of Blue?
No.
Don't. It's a blind girl falls in love with Sidney Poitier because she is blind and so she's not racist. It's so stupid.
Oh, God.
There's a lot of blind girl falls in love with unlovable person tropes out there.
Yeah.
And it's problematic, obviously. But I really think, I saw this before I saw Manhunter, and I really think this was one of the first times that I saw a disabled woman portrayed as a sexual being.
Yes.
And I really appreciate that. And I really like Emily Watson. Like, I just think, and Joan Allen is great in Manhunter, too. Like, the great Joan Allen. I love her. But yeah, like, I really like seeing a blind woman who is just a normal person.
Right.
Who just doesn't see. And
is horny for tigers. Just, mentioning
never
that again.
Forget. Never forget.
I feel like it's harder to get tiger access than that. Like, even if he has a friend, just like, oh, yeah, come on in.
Yeah.
Come on in. Pet the tiger.
That's fine. Yeah. No big.
He did them a big favor by getting them the right kind of film to film the tigers.
I feel was it really that much of a problem? Like, did he really work that hard to get this film?
Just an order form.
He didn't make it. I just.
I started at a 60, and no, really, I'm deducting one for that ponytail. 59.
Can you go into our spreadsheet and find out what score I gave The Bone Collector?
The Bone Collector? I was
because
trying to...
I was like, this movie is The Bone Collector, but a little better.
I don't even remember. I mean, I saw it.
We did an episode on it.
Yeah.
Was that Denzel movie?
Yeah, Denzel.
I was thinking
and
of...
Angelina Jolie?
Yeah. I was confusing it with the Bone something. The Lovely Bones.
That was terrible movie.
Those are different. It's not terrible. We don't have time for Lovely Bones. You gave Bone Collector a 40.
Oh, no, this is way better than that. I'm going to go with, 59 feels right. I'm stealing your score.
That's fine. You've owned a copy of this movie for 2 decades.
I know. 65.
And only gets you to 65.
Yeah. Listen, this is just such an example of a movie.
I'm a completist. So right. Probably...
Oh, yeah.
Right. Is this the second best? I mean, it has to be, right?
Yeah, it's definitely better.
I mean, if
than
we
Hannibal.
Don't count the don't TV count series.
My... Yeah.
Believe is that it's... good?
It
oh,
is.
My God, Sean.
Yeah.
It's well, I had to stop watching it because it is so upsetting. And I had like a full on mental breakdown during the second season finale. And Colin was like, I feel like you should maybe not watch this show anymore.
Maybe one step away.
He was like, respectfully, I don't think it's safe for you to watch this. So I've never seen the third season, but God, are the first two seasons so good. And also, Mads Mikkelsen is so good as Hannibal that Anthony Hopkins is no longer the definitive Hannibal Lecter to me, which is basically, it sounds impossible, but it's true.
Which also, Brian Cox...
really good. It's interesting watching it because it's such a different take because it predated Anthony. Like, obviously, Mads Mikkelsen was somewhat influenced by Anthony Hopkins. He plays him differently, but he knows what he is working in the context of, I guess, is the way to put it. And Brian Cox is just like, this is my take on this character. And he seems much more like a normal guy who happens to eat people.
Right, yeah.
Right, as opposed to the weirdest person who's ever existed. I really like, I'm glad that they, in Manhunter, they don't have the prologue portion.
Right. Mm.
I really enjoy seeing Hannibal Lecter and his little palace.
Yes.
I love his house. Yeah. It's so good.
Yeah.
I'm like, you get to eat two people if you're this good. at interior decorating.
Although you should not leave multiple arrows out in your study where you intend to murder people.
And you shouldn't write sweetbreads in a... That
seems like a real, like, gimme plot.
I know.
Yeah. Like, do you think... I assume he was, as soon as the guy walked in and it was like, he's eating them, that Hannibal was like, oh, go get your coat and something to murder you with.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
61 was the score, by the way. 61 for Red Dragon seems fine to me. 2, the bingo card. So much broken glass. Everywhere broken glass.
The scene also where she walks past the shattered mirror in her house. I was like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
Shit, this is scary. All right.
Oh, yeah.
Is this a movie about obsession?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Other than that.
Old school answering machine.
Who had an answering machine?
Will Graham. When you can hear Harvey Keitel tell him about that.
Isn't Hannibal Lecter always grocery shopping? Anyway.
Gross.
I remember there was a scene in a grocery store in Manhunter.
Yeah.
That scene doesn't take place. Okay.
So, yeah, I guess the other thing I want to say about Will Graham and also Manhunter is that while Ed Norton is really good in this role, I don't like that the bit at the end where he's like, I'm going to use your mom's voice against you. I was like, you're not totally selling this, buddy.
Yeah, also, I feel like, what kind of trauma is that leaving for his son?
I also thought, I mean, obviously that son is fucked.
Right.
But what I was going to say is that I do think the, like, portrayal of Will Graham as someone who absolutely needs to leave this life, like, and has tried. He's in the fucking Florida Keys, right?
Yeah.
You know, sun bleaching his hair.
Oh, this lifestyle. I thought you meant.
Oh, like being alive?
Yes.
No. I meant this person has paid his dues.
Yes, he's done it. I've done it.
And
don't call me.
The fact that he says, like, people might die if I don't help, that's really compelling to me.
Yeah.
He's wrong. As Sean said, Barney Fife could catch this guy.
Nothing to do with the outcome.
But I think that that's really interesting character-wise, and I like the character Will Graham. What can I say?
A very minor complaint, but there are 4,600 households in Marathon, Florida. He did not have enough information to find him.
What? Wait, I thought it was like a little island.
Especially with a generic name like Will Graham.
It's a fairly small place, but I looked it up. There are 4,600 households, and all he had was the town.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe he could ask around, but he found him quickly.
Super fast.
Yeah. Anyway. So...
Yeah, Manhunter, I think he gives him the exact address.
He does.
You can't handle the truth. I got some big ones, so I'll go last. Robin?
Okay, well, can we talk about Beetlejuice? Because I know it's been out for a minute, but I just wanted to acknowledge that it is the movie that made me say, maybe I should be using the heart function on Letterboxd, because that is not a good movie. And yet, I enjoyed it very much. And so I like that I was able to say, fun, bad movie.
Nice.
Yeah, it's a fun, bad movie.
Yeah.
The script is terrible. Like, terrible, terrible. I don't know why I keep seizing on this part. They have blown up the 45-second perfect Deo sequence into
a
6-minute, cute but way overdone MacArthur Park sequence.
I liked it.
It's cute, but we don't need the whole damn song.
I don't think that was the whole damn song.
Maybe
not. That song's way too long.
And at one point, Beetlejuice leans aside and says, oh, I love a good dream sequence. Couple of things.
That was pretty good. Michael Keaton, by the way.
Thank you. One, that's not a joke of any kind. That's just a statement that adds nothing to what's going on. 2, we're not in a dream sequence. It's things that are actually happening. And that, to me, is the whole script. It's just people saying stuff unedited. Like, it's just, it's bad, and it doesn't come together. But I've seen it 1.5 times, and I was never, like, bummed out that I was watching it.
Yeah.
You know, I think you're right.
Just other than that, I haven't been back to the theater, which is annoying me. But I saw Lisa Frankenstein. Disappointing.
Yeah.
I liked it.
What did you think?
Disappointing.
Yeah.
Like, I was expecting much more from it.
Very slight.
Yeah.
There's not a lot there.
Yeah.
It kind of feels like a half-hour pilot that got stretched out into a movie.
Yeah. Yeah. There's like, yeah, I expected so much more, and not like I was expecting like this great depth of a film.
No.
But I wanted there to be funnier, spookier, just...
More.
Yeah.
I definitely wanted it to be funnier. I didn't think it was particularly funny at all. And I don't know. I just kind of was like bored with it.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I did not expect at all, given the subject matter and Diablo Cody and et cetera. Love the opening credits, though. Opening title sequence, amazing. And then also I watched Horizon, An American Saga, Chapter 1.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? I was vibing on that movie. Like, I was working on a jigsaw puzzle while I was watching it, so it wasn't, like, my full focus. Mm-hmm. There were various times that Colin would ask me to clarify what was going on in the plot, and I'd be like, I don't know. but I was enjoying it. I'm probably going to go see part two in the theater.
Oh, I'll probably see part two.
Yeah, like, I was just like, this is fun Western vibes.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
And it's... I'll be talking about a self-financed passion project in a bit. you know, I wish it either would have been like, you know, one Unforgiven length movie that had a beginning, middle, and an end, or a series that I probably wouldn't have watched.
I never would have watched it if it were a series.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Wear your hats. Wear your hats, Kevin. Ride your horses.
I mostly want to say, tell your dad. Tell your dad to watch Horizon.
Does your dad have a comfortable chair? Sit him down in that chair.
Are you a dad with a comfortable chair?
Mm-hmm. Camila?
Rebel Ridge on Netflix.
Oh, I watched that too.
Aaron Pierre.
What on earth is going on with that man's perfect face?
I don't know. I'm here for it. I saw him play Malcolm X twice.
Really?
He was Malcolm X, I think, in the MLKX/X. It was like a limited series on Discovery.
Oh, wow. I didn't even know that happened.
And then I think, well, maybe I have him confused with somebody else about the other one. But I've watched him play Malcolm X.
Okay.
And he's done very well in it. And apparently, I don't recall it, but he was an old.
I was going to say, I remember him from old.
I don't remember
him. I mean, he's only in it for a little while because he gets old.
But yeah, I can't really fully tell you what the plot of the movie was. There's like, but he's a great fighter. Like, I love the fight scenes.
Yes. Sean, have you seen this movie?
I have not.
Oh, you should watch it. It's, yeah. It is First Blood. It is just the movie First Blood, okay. the first Rambo movie.
Right. He's trying to get his brother out of jail. Cops do him dirty by stealing his money. He spends the rest of the movie trying to get it back from Don Johnson. Which
my theory, okay, this is what I skated
from Don
about.
Johnson.
Don so
Johnson.
This is the thing.
That hit me late and I was like, wait, what?
So here's the thing. Don Johnson was on Miami Vice, Michael Mann show. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, created by Anthony Yerkovich, but whatever. Like, the whole point of that show was that these cops get to wear nice suits and drive Ferraris because they're stealing them from drug dealers, right? Or like, you know, whatever they call it, asset forfeiting them. And so this is a movie about what's wrong with asset forfeiture and cops generally. And I'm very curious if Don Johnson has any awareness of the meta level of that casting.
Probably not.
Like, I think the answer is probably not, with all due respect.
Right.
But yeah, I really enjoyed that movie. And I really hope that they make sequels.
Me too.
And I really hope that those sequels become Second Bloods as opposed to I don't want to see Rambo about this character.
No.
Oh.
But yes. I am interested in following this character wherever he goes.
Yes.
As long as
and looking at his fucking gorgeous those face.
Eyes, those fucking eyes. And he's British. Fuck.
Oh, they're all British.
Ah. And I saw Speak No Evil, the remake.
As did I.
I feel like we're...
No, I to cut to the chase.
Had you both seen the original?
Yes.
I have not.
Okay.
Okay, so the, yeah.
No, you were at 4 stars and I was at 3 stars. We're both
not
positive.
Too far,
right? Yeah.
I think my other star is just horny star. James McAvoy.
Relatable content. Yeah. I will be stealing that phrase.
But yeah, I'd see it again. Like, I thought it was really good. I thought McAvoy did what I expected him to do in this role as this fucking sociopath. And there is a definitive point where it veers off from the original.
Why do we keep doing this is my question.
Well, I think this was valid.
Okay.
Because you'd absolutely see two different visions.
Okay.
From directors and writers of the same content.
Okay.
And it's worth it. Like, both versions are worth it.
They feel legitimate.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's interesting.
I thought he was great. I thought Mackenzie Davis was great. I love the setting in the house and the suspense and the tension. You know, is this the tightest story ever? Is this like a plot hole free time. No.
Not so much.
But especially in theater. I know that there will be. Did you watch it in a theater?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm sure this many more people will see this at home because it's an easy thing to throw on,
right,
on a spooky evening. But just the like kind of stewing in this one, like an afternoon viewing, you know, suspense flick. It's really good.
Yeah,
I was exhausted and I stayed awake the whole time.
Oh, that is always a good. That's a mark of a quality film.
Yeah,
that's
absolutely
the big endorsement. Actually, my biggest problem with it is, you know, not every movie has a moral, has a lesson, has something to impart. Some are just movies. However, if this one does, that moral is never trust people and don't travel.
Yeah,
it's absolutely. It's very, I mean,
that sounds like a legitimate moral.
Yeah, I mean, flat out, like, you can go into this movie, there are people that could go in and be like, this would never happen to me. I can guarantee you it would never happen to me.
Because I'm not going to exchange numbers with people I meet on vacation.
No, and I'm not going to their house for a fucking week.
But that's not, you know, we should be, in this age of isolation, encouraging people to, like, get out and meet people and talk to people and stretch your, that's just a thing that I'm on personally.
I guess my thing is not necessarily don't talk to people and don't try to be friends with them on vacation.
Right.
Don't go to their house.
Well, not in the middle of nowhere. I do support the remain in range of emergency services and keep your cell phone signal at all times. Yeah. I support that part of it. But
also kind of worry about your own damn kids. No, I'm joking.
Remaining in range of emergency services is harder than you think it is.
I know. Hell of a country we got here. No, it's so. Did you have anything else?
No.
I also recommend Speak No Evil. What I don't recommend is Francis Ford Coppola's Megalopolis, a fable.
Oh my God! Is it really called that? A fable?
Yeah,
oh
boy. That's under the.
Oh boy.
Where to begin? I mean, this movie dug its own grave in so many ways that, you know, you can come in at whichever of the many controversies around this movie you want. But ultimately, he's old and confused and doesn't have it anymore. And that's why no one wanted to give him $100 million to make a never more than half cooked idea, and because he had a vineyard to sell and could afford to make it on his own, he did it anyway, and it's shitty. It's just bad. I understand there are plenty of reviewers who are like, a bold vision, fuck off. It's there is
where's his vineyard?
California.
Okay, yeah, so he's selling a vineyard that will be worthless in 10 years.
That part of it was a good idea. There is nothing. Everyone's like, oh, he's pushing the medium forward. The fuck he is. Everyone's going on and on about if you were at a special screening like I was, and I guess in some of the IMAX formats, there is a moment in the film that has nothing to do with fuck, where a person in the room with you gets up and walks up to the screen and talks into a microphone like it's a news conference. And Adam Driver's character answers that question.
What?
So how is this going to work for normals?
Right, for streaming. And
they'll just cut that part out because it has nothing to do with fuck. But anyway, so that I'm seeing all these people are like, what an amazing moment to experience. There's never been anything like this. Unless you've seen Rocky Horror Picture Show once for the last yeah, we can walk up to the screen and act like we're talking to people. And it's, you know, people are like, oh, it's so it's so nonlinear, and there's so many experiments. Every experiment in this, every weird flourish and every unusual shot and every odd background and every like stylistic choice has been made in other movies. You just have to ignore that no one's tried to mash them all together nonsensically before, except kind of Tarantino. That's his whole thing. So let's not pretend that's new, and he can do it and still make sense of a plot.
Sometimes.
The plot does not come together. The story is nothing. You know, the one detail that I seized upon in trying to figure out how this happened is the earliest versions of him working on this. He was like, I would just have all of these notes and scraps of dialogue and different ideas and, you know, nothing that was a full concept, just different concepts that I wanted to bring together. And that's all it is. Like, here's a little bit of a scene. Here's a little bit of Lawrence Fishburne doing voiceover. Here's some words on the screen for no reason. Here we're going to cut off into this character that you didn't integrate into the rest of the movie at all. It's just a mess. And anyone who tells you otherwise is still buying into the great director's theory of cinema that and wants to believe that this guy who has more bad movies than he has good. I know his good ones are really good, but he has a lot of duds. People want to believe that he still has magic, and he just doesn't.
I mean, what's the last movie he even made?
He's made a couple that you have not heard of in the past.
Listen, here's the thing. I'm still going to go see. I don't even know. I have no idea if I missed my one chance to see it on a movie screen, but...
No, it'll be playing this weekend.
It will? Yeah. Okay. I'm going to go see it, and I'm going to get high. And I think I'm going to like it.
Well, that's the other illuminating detail. Yeah. People say he was high at all times while making it, and he would walk in and be like, no, today we're going to explore this, and just make them do something that wasn't in the script.
And then sexually harass some people.
And molest some extras.
Yeah.
But... So that's what it feels like. Yeah. It feels like a guy who's just fucking around and now is making it our problem. The last movie...
It's really unfortunate that every bad thing I hear about this movie makes me feel more like, yeah, I'm going to go watch it again.
Well, the
people do love a train wreck.
Yeah.
I mean, the unfortunate thing with all that is it's mostly dull. It's not as long as I thought it was going to be. It's like 220.
Good.
It's not the 3.5
I love that I think
that,
that's short.
Right? Seriously. It's like 220. Oh, yeah. And that's
well, I also thought it was 3 plus. So there's a huge difference between 220 and 3 plus.
Yeah. Balthazar Getty is in this. He loves a good nonsensical film. Huh?
Aubrey Plaza is great. One of the three.
Wow, Platinum.
Well, Aubrey Plaza as WoW Platinum is the only person, not only understood the assignment, invented the assignment for herself, and it just spread out from there. She, one of the 3 out of 10 that I am giving this movie is for Aubrey Plaza.
Okay, 3 out of 10.
The last movie he made was called Twixt in 2011.
Nope.
Sure.
Before that, it was called Tetro in 2009.
That sounds vaguely familiar as a thing that I was once aware existed.
Youth Without Youth in 2007. Before that, it's The Rainmaker in 1997. So he hasn't he hasn't made like a movie that people went to in 27 years.
Damn.
But you know what? The Rainmaker is one of those, this is a movie kind of movies that I just, that will, any random rainy afternoon, I'm like, yep, I'll watch that one.
I'm sure that that's good.
Doesn't everybody have one of those? Collins is Runaway Jury.
Rainy afternoon?
Like a mid-tier legal thriller or some kind of thing that it's just like, I will watch this.
Probably The Firm, if it's
on. The Firm is probably the best of those movies.
I don't know about a legal thriller. I like a legal thriller, but I don't have one. But that like,
I kind of mean just that.
Con Air? Does Con Air count?
I was thinking more along the lines of a movie for grown-ups.
You're saying that Con Air.
Do not think Con Air is a movie for grown-ups.
Well, I'd have to think about it.
Okay.
Yeah. I do not recommend seeing it unless you are coming into it as Robin is and just saying, I gotta know what's going on in there. I've seen worse movies. Few other movies have made me hate movies as much as Megalopolis has. What's a positive note? Well, I rewatched and Mary Beth watched Up. She had not seen Up, and Disney was very heavy on Up merchandise this time, so we were kind of awash in Up when we were down there.
What? How does that occur?
I don't know. They just pushed something. Lilo and Stitch was everywhere right now, too. There's just like rounds of merchandise cycles that they're like, we're selling, you know, any identifiable property.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did she become crazy depressed within the first 5 minutes?
Yes.
I feel like watching the beginning of Up when you've just gotten married.
Yeah. That's harsh.
Well, that's what... It kept coming up because I am the old man from Up. This was first pointed out by Shannon Norman, local comedian, who in a roast battle said, I look like the old man from Up's senior picture. Very accurate. And so since then, like my icon on Disney Plus and on my Walt Disney World app is the old man from Up. And so we kept referring to that. And she's I wish we had seen it beforehand. You can get... cake, you could get a wedding cake topper of them at their wedding kissing and little
I've seen that one.
So when we got home, I was like, and she cried all day, not just while watching the movie, then the tears continued. But that movie is great. It's a little weak in the back half, but I think it's still
a little weak in the back after the first 10 minutes.
Right. It's like, where do we go from here?
I have watched that movie one time.
That's great. We're still in spooky season. Let's draw another spooky movie. Started out strong.
Oh, no.
And now, not as strong.
Oh, no.
The 2019's The Curse of La Llorona. This is a...
Didn't you like this?
No.
Didn't we just watch this?
It feels like it, but no.
I've never seen it.
This is one of the weaker entries in the Conjuring universe.
Yeah, I think I was going to watch it because I found out it was supposed to be part of that.
I mean, it can, like, one scene connects. I was very disappointed by it because that's a very, very spooky urban legend folklore.
Yeah. You like thing. A different movie about it that was yes, a foreign film.
That's what I like.
Yeah.
It is not this one.
It's not it.
Mm-hmm. You're the only one with a veto, so unless you're really opposed.
I am not.
I mean, it's a movie. It's probably short.
I was going to watch it anyway at some point.
Yeah.
93 minutes. 93 Great. Minutes.
Oh, look at that.
Great.
In and out.
And I did just see there's a, why, Tony, the my pick for the best attraction at Halloween Horror Nights this year is called Monstruos. Monsters of Latin America, I think, and about a third of it is La Llorona related, and she steals babies and eats them.
Yeah,
and I would have thought they would have shied away in a major theme park, but no, she's just eating the babies in there. I'm like, oh, good for you. And you went all the way.
Wow, it's on Paramount.
It's a weird note to end on.
Do you think Hannibal's ever eaten a baby?
We need the song.
I do. That's the one. As soon as you say Snowpiercer.
I was just going to say, I'm like, babies taste the best.
I picture Captain America saying babies taste the best. The song, it was what Red Dragon, October 4th, 2002. What was the number one song in America?
Beyonce.
No.
Justin Timberlake.
No.
Britney Spears.
No. Go down two orders of stardom and then take that person. And
Mandy Moore.
Jessica Simpson.
No, but you're in the right ballpark.
What's her Jennifer Page? No, that's Mandy Moore.
So we're in a pop. Yes, Avril popstress. Lavigne.
No, I wouldn't have got the timeline right on this. I wouldn't have thought this person had done the thing yet in
Gwen Stefani? Ashanti.
No.
Had done. You wouldn't have thought the person had done the thing yet.
Yes.
Fergie.
No.
I guess she was still. Just a pee at that point.
Just a pee.
Just a pee.
You know they're doing a Vegas residency without her and no one will buy tickets.
Oh.
They're doing a Las Vegas residency and they can't get people. That's they're like crazy. Giving them out to the players at the tables and stuff because.
I liked them before she was with them.
I remember that album being really good. Yeah. Yes, that was like the party album.
Exactly.
Yes.
No, I did not know that this performer had emerged victorious yet. And October of 2002. I would have thought that they had won the thing a slightly later than that.
Emerged victorious from they left a band or something?
No, they won something.
Oh, Kelly Clarkson! Clarkson!
Thank you.
Ooh.
Madam Web, I'm going to watch Idol.
Strong enough?
No.
Behind these hazel eyes.
No, you got to go. This is like her fifth or sixth most prominent.
Miss Independent?
Mm-mm. All I remember of this song is that there is one line to the chorus, and it still has a repeated chorus and a key change repeated chorus at the end. So she's just there singing this sentence 12 times in a row.
Is it? No, I think that's... Is it about like you made me cry all the time, but that's behind these hazel eyes?
No.
Yeah, I don't know, Sean.
Some people wait a lifetime for
a moment like this.
Yeah,
that was her American Idol song.
Oh, that was
that's her American Idol song.
I thought it was Since You've Been Gone.
No.
What is her American Idol song?
A moment like this,
like but the I one mean, that won.
Yeah,
I'm not understanding fully what this means because did I? Never mind.
Hang on. It's like this is how this works.
I watched this season.
They write you a song that
okay,
you
that's
perform
what I was, okay, that's
in the
what
finale.
I was forgetting. All right.
And then that song went to number one for like the first five seasons.
That's
like even Taylor Hicks went to number one.
That's what I was missing.
Yeah.
That they write you a song.
They write you a song for the finale. Yeah. Okay. And that's what it was.
You guys know what happened to Justin?
No.
You remember? You know,
is he alive?
Yeah, he is.
Okay,
but he has a very prominent career as Little Sweetness, I think.
I'm sorry.
Dr. Pepper commercials.
Oh, the guy who loves berries and cream?
The Little Sweetness. Like, there's a little guy that shows up, like, everybody is like.
He's like the voice of a cartoon spokesperson. Is
not
what
even
you're
a cartoon.
Me?
He's just tiny?
Yeah, he's tiny.
So sweet, unique. Baby, that's. there's nothing better. I bet you probably done something that deserves a Dr. Pepper.
That's there's Justin
there's
Guarini?
There's a tiny yes. Justin Guarini telling people to drink Dr. Pepper.
I believe so. Yes.
I mean, yes. That's... that's a whole, you know how rich Flo is, like
did you read that profile of her where they were like, so you make like what, $10 million a year, and she laughed at them.